Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. It's Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Melinda Hinson Neely. She's going to talk about her book, her second book, Eat In, Not Out, the Learn How to Cook book with our recipes. If you have any questions, go ahead and post your questions in the chat room, or you can call us at 347-324-3460. Melinda, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I guess to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself. Our audience like to get a personal view versus reading us reading a bio. But tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm a native Southerner, born and raised in Tennessee. And, and I was a little bit of a health nut even as a small child because I started running when I was in the seventh grade. But when I went off to college, I, decided with my skill set of math and science, it was either, okay, I'll be a doctor or an engineer, which will it be? And I chose the pre-med route in college and decided to major in nutrition. And when I got out of college, though, I changed my mind about going to medical school, went back and got my MBA and spent a career in marketing, both working for packaged goods manufacturers, and then I ran my own business and still do marketing consulting on my own. So, but I've kind of come full circle with these books on health and wellness. So,
wow. Well, it's a great inspiration. Kind of tell us about, you mentioned you're being in the seventh grade. What prompted you to start running and start talking about health and mainly going around that track?
Well, that's
health,
a really good question. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's funny. I had my history teacher was the track coach, and he just threw out there one day, why don't you start running? And I did. And then I came back like a couple months later and said, well, I've been running. I don't think you believe me. And then I'm like, oh, I really did. And so it kind of went from there, and I kind of enjoyed it. I was a little bit introverted at that age, and it was something for me to kind of embark on that gave me confidence and, just it kind of made me feel good about myself and made me feel good. So
this is your second book, and it's the first book and from the second book. Kind of tell us the difference between those two books, and how did you come out with the title for the second book?
Okay, well, my first book is called Finding Life's Secret Sauce, and it's really kind of my overall theory on health and wellness and how you put the little pieces together of, eating well and fitness and other life adventures, even despite your busy schedule. What are some secrets to maintain a healthy life? And then, from there, I really kind of harken back to the first book. Because I think, a lot of times eating well specifically starts by cooking food for yourself. And because if somebody's always making food for you, you really never know what you're eating. So that inspired the second book, and it really does promote eating at home versus eating out.
What do you think the challenges? I know families are busy today, and it's easier to go by McDonald's and Burger King and so forth and grab a burger or a Happy Meal for your child, but how, when you actually sit there and line everything out, how can a person mentally put themselves that they really need to cook, besides the health benefits of that, but also the preparation, how can a person plan that whole week of meals mentally? Because it's not just the physical part of it, it's the mental part.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of gave me the answer in your question, and that really goes back to planning. And I'll be the first to admit I'm not the world's best planner, but if I know I've got, three tennis matches in a given week, then I know I have to do something in advance, whether it's making meals ahead of time or making meals that, you know, just don't take much prep time to pull together so that people can eat before, you know, the family's gone for the night. And it can be very challenging, and sometimes it may come down to, okay, well, all we have time to do now is drink a protein shake and we'll eat dinner when we get back home. But there are a number of things that are quick and easy to make, and then, of course, you can always make meals ahead of time, too.
How a person can make them, what should they make that's going to be really easy? You know, you can always put carrots and things like that together. But I think it's twofold. When you have dealing with kids, you got to make it fun and inviting. I think that's what the challenges the schools really have today. When I was teaching, you know, we start to have hamburgers, but not what they have today. They have a hodgepodge of you name it. It's a dream. I mean, kids look forward to lunch. Then we didn't look forward to lunch. Okay, that gives us a break. But we didn't have pizza and hamburgers and all this other stuff. That, oh my gosh, I just can't wait to have some Doritos or something like that, and that's what they have today. How can you pull a child from that?
At this point, it is challenging. And, you know, I'm actually working on a funny blog post about, you know, people making fun of me because I don't let my child go to McDonald's. But, you know, I think there are going to be times when you just have to accept what is and not worry about it. But then there are other occasions. I mean, I think with my child specifically, by feeding him healthy foods at night, he tends not to want the junk food at lunch. So, I mean, I think you develop this sort of repertoire for healthy food if indeed that's what you're eating. And on the flip side, if you're eating French fries and McDonald's McNuggets every day, I think you develop an affinity for fatty foods. So I think it's, you know, you can really develop your palate to like certain things or not.
What type of foods are those? I mean, some people know, some people don't. Kind of tell us, what are healthy foods?
I just think at the end of the day, when you look at healthy whole foods, you know, something that's come straight from the earth, it's hard to beat that, whether it's a fruit or a vegetable. Anything that you can pick from the ground and eat is the healthiest thing you're going to probably put in your body. And, you know, I know a lot of people like chicken, fish, and beef, and, you know, if you can take more sustainably grown meats, you know, you can throw those into the mix of the healthy whole foods. But I think that certainly is the best way to go if you're looking to eat well.
Okay. And your opinion when it comes to dealing with beef and chicken and fish, are they going to be in the same category, or are they really you just need to stick with the plant-based?
You know, I, despite the fact that everybody thinks I'm a vegetarian, I'm not. And I think, again, it's about eating things in moderation. I eat beef. I only like certain kinds of beef, but I try to pick foods that are more sustainably grown from local farms or organic foods when I can afford them. I mean, just like everyone else, I can't always afford them. And same with chicken. And then I'm very partial to fish. I could probably eat fish every night, but my family doesn't want fish every night. So again, we just kind of have a variety. And then I sneak in vegetarian meals when I can at night. So I think by having that variety that we kind of eat a little bit of everything in moderation.
You know, there was something on television a few years back regarding a lot of recipes that were available on the internet that for carrots you can kind of incorporate into this particular dish, but there's some of them are desserts, some of them are just regular meals, so kids would know exactly what they're eating. Instead of regular potatoes, go to sweet potatoes. Anything that, in your opinion, in your books, that kind of disguise food? You still get the healthy nutrition and the taste, but it's disguised in a different way for your child.
Well, you know, it's funny. I tend not to disguise food because I feel like, you know, if I continue to disguise food, he's never going to really know what he's eating. On the flip side, I've made some foods. For example, I'll make tofu enchiladas and I've made, you know, veggie burgers, different types of veggie burgers. And I've made eggplant parmesan, and those are just a few examples where when I serve them, he'll first turn to me and say, "Oh, Mom, I love the meat." So he's not even aware that he's eating, you know, the meat alternative. So, and I'm not actually trying to hide it from him, but he just hasn't figured that out. So.
Yeah, that, you know, they're getting pretty good on these veggie burgers. So do you make yours from scratch or you just buy them?
I do make them from scratch, and it depends on what else I'm cooking that week. If I cook something with black beans, I'll make black bean veggie burgers. Or if I'm making something with black-eyed peas, I'll make black-eyed pea veggie burgers. So it kind of depends on, you know, what I've got in my house. But I have discovered that the homemade veggie burgers are about 100 times better than the ones you buy.
So how can you make a veggie burger from home?
You know, you can take whatever kind of bean, you kind of a bean base, and then you tend to add some sort of grain, whether it's rice or maybe it's a bread base. And then generally there's different herbs. And, you know, it's kind of the same basic combination of ingredients. You know, some of the grain with the bean with something, you know, wet to hold it together and some flavor, and then you add the flavor to it. And they're really, really delicious.
Wow. So just simple beans and grains, and then also something, do you use like an egg or something to kind of hold it together or?
Yeah. Eggs kind of keep it wet and hold it together. And then, you know, sometimes you can add like a cornmeal to it. Again, all these things just to add some substance. And then, you know, a lot of times I'll sneak in some red peppers and some other, you know, healthy little vegetables too. So, you know, all depending on what I've got in my fridge, basically.
Well, any other type of thing that people normally carry in their refrigerator, you know, they're always going to carry, in most cases, eggs, milk, flour. Should the person get the wheat flour or, you know, to get away from that whole flour or really,
you know,
doesn't really
matter?
You know,
I think it is healthier to eat the wheat flour, but, you know, I have both because, you know, there are certain things that I make that, you know, the wheat flavor, the texture is somewhat different than the white flour, and sometimes I'll do a combination of the two. And, you know, and I, like I said, I'm a believer in moderation, and I do make my fair share of sweets, and sometimes the white flour is better when you're baking.
Okay. What's common a person normally carry in the refrigerator that, hey, you can pull something together? Or what basic items that a person should always have that they can make something at any time?
You know, I think we do, you mentioned quite a few of the dairy products, you know, the milk, eggs, cheese, you know, some of the dairy items. And then I have a whole host of vegetables sitting in my fridge and tortillas. And you can almost always throw something together with a bunch of veggies, and you know, whether you're using those veggies with tortillas or rice or whatever, you know, that's always a good easy meal too. So those are, and then, you know, I generally have some plain yogurt because I tend to use yogurt in a lot of different things as well, and I usually have some tofu in the fridge, and you know, that kind of rounds out, I think, the basic ingredients I generally have in my fridge.
Okay. And when it comes to, do you have like your own garden that you plant and harvest from that?
I do, although ironically, I just moved into a new house and we moved kind of in the awkward season when you needed to start planting all your food. So this summer I'm just going to have to live with anything I can put in a container. And then next year we'll get back to our usual usual veggie garden, but it does vary all depending on where you live and what you can grow. So,
and what type of items do you normally grow in your yard, and when should you be planting?
Well, it all depends on where you live, because in the South you can plant earlier in the year than here. You know, they advise in the, I live in Boise, Idaho, you know, that if there's still snow in the mountains next to the town, it's too soon to plant anything because you might get another frost, which would ruin everything you've just planted. But I generally, you know, I try to grow things that are kind of expensive at the store but easy to grow at home. And that includes everything from different types of lettuces and spinach and tomatoes and that sort of thing. You know, I've grown things like broccoli and cabbage, but I didn't really feel like it tasted a lot better than what I bought at the market. And it's, you know, not a lot less expensive either. So I tend to do it by expense as well as by what grows well.
Okay. So you're taking into account, okay, how much is it going to cost for me to go ahead and plant and harvest and so forth. Is it really easy to just go to your local farmer's market or go to a seed store and just grab these seeds like broccoli and just do your whole garden that way and watch them grow? Or
I was going to say, I do it both. Sometimes I take the seed and germinate them inside before I plant them, and then sometimes I plant the seeds directly in the garden. And then other times, if I'm running later, I just decide I want to add something new. I might even just go to Home Depot and buy something that's already, you know, growing and planted. So I kind of do all three.
Anything to use for fertilizer?
I do use, you know, I go to my local, we have a local kind of organic gardening store, and I'm like, okay, what do I buy? And I get whatever they tell me to get. So, I do use a fertilizer.
Okay. Anything you use to keep the bugs off?
You know, I have not been using anything to keep the bugs off, but, you know, the climate here is not too buggy, so I've been okay with that. But, again, I know that does vary by climate.
Yeah, especially in the South.
Yeah. A few more bugs there than here.
Yeah, you're going to be having a whole meal there for them. We're going to take a break real quick, and we'll be back in a moment with Melinda Neely talking about her book, Eat In and Not Out. Be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Kim Jacquet.
Okay, we're back with Eat In, Not Out. I guess let's talk about health and nutrition. Tell us about, when it comes to nutrition, do you believe in dieting for weight loss?
You know, I actually don't, and I say that because when I went off to college, I gained my healthy 25 pounds, and I obsessed over calories and diets to try to drop the weight I gained. And it really wasn't until I completely changed my habits and just started eating better that I actually lost the weight and kept it off. And, you know, and ever since then, I've just had that, you know, that inner mantra that is like, just eat in moderation. I mean, you don't have to deprive yourself from things you love. You just have to not eat, you know, a whole pie, just eat, a piece of the pie. And, and, you know, I think if you go with that approach, you know, you'll be okay in the end. So.
Well, it's kind of amazing because really people are addicted to certain processed food. I mean, if you really love cake, I mean, you just can't stop at one cupcake. When you go to Sprinkles, you're going to have maybe another one. And, you know, when you have three of them, then you say, oh, my gosh, I really should have just had one. But it's like it's an addiction on certain things. But once you get it and then you gorge on it, then all of a sudden now you're sick and it's kind of a strange type thing, but it's an addiction. And that's, I think, when you're talking about really dieting, how can you control that eat in moderation? I think if you don't eat it and you train your body a certain way, then it's easier to go to your Sprinkles cupcake and eat a half a cupcake. But it's like you got to set yourself up first. And like you have to go through this withdrawal for a week, and then things taper off, and then you just don't have the need. Then you can go just eat half. What is your opinion on that?
Well, I think you're right to a certain degree, especially with sweets, because I think there are people do have an addiction to sugary things, and if you can cut down or cut out even for a brief duration of time, I think you can sort of gradually, you know, wean them back in your diet without, you know, having an obsession over them. But on the flip side, I mean, I really love kettle chips, the salt and vinegar potato chips. And I've trained myself to buy a package and, like, see how long I can make the package last in my cabinet, which so that I'm not, you know, eating the whole thing when I sit down and, you know, and really practice that discipline. So, you know, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, I think some people do need to cut it out completely and then maybe gradually add it back in. Or you can, you know, on the flip side, try to train yourself to just have, you know, one cookie instead of three, or one sprinkled cupcake. I had my first sprinkled cupcake last summer, so I know how good they are. to just have the one instead of having three. Because I think, you know, it's a matter of just discipline. And I think the other thing, too, is making sure you're eating healthy foods before you eat that, you know, addicted item. Because if you just had a really healthy dinner and you went out to exercise that day, it definitely reduces that need for the third cupcake because you're already feeling good and you're full and, you know, and you just don't have the need as much, I don't think.
Wow. What are the top three most important tips for healthy eating?
You know, well, I have to say this one, which is eat in, not out, because it's the title of my book. But I think, obviously you're going to have to eat out sometimes and you're going to want to eat out sometimes. But the more you can make healthy whole food, you know, whole meals at home, you know, the better off you're going to be. And then, you know, just and do try to adhere as much as you can to eating, you know, those plant-based, you know, homegrown foods and, you know, organic meats and whatnot versus eating processed foods, because, you know, that's kind of where you enter the danger zone when you enter when you eat the processed foods. And then I think lastly, a trick that's kind of worked nicely for me is to just eat balanced meals. You know you're supposed to have carbohydrates, proteins, and healthy fats. So, you know, without going to the trouble of counting the grams of everything, just to make sure you get a little bit of each when you're eating your meals, and then that helps you incorporate more balance in your diet.
You know, in elementary school, you know, you're taught what to eat, those four major groups, but somehow it, as you grow older, I guess as a teenager, you burn a lot of fat and so forth. So you really, a lot of people don't have that problem unless they do eat out a lot. But what are the healthy ingredients that you should be eating? The four major groups that people, they heard of, but they just haven't comprehended yet. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first of these is carbohydrates, and I know there are a lot of diets, you know, there are a lot of diets out there that will tell you not to eat carbohydrates, and then others that will tell you not to eat fat at all. But I think, you know, good carbohydrates, not sugar, not white sugar, but, you know, good healthy carbohydrates, you know, a certain percentage of those, as well as protein, because protein gives you energy, it helps control your metabolism. The third thing are those healthy fats. Again, not vegetable oil, but nuts and avocados and salmon has a healthy fat. And then the fourth kind of category is dietary fiber to help prevent disease. So those are the four that, you know, again, it's not, and I know it gets confusing because even the USDA changes what percentage of what we're supposed to eat. So that's why I feel like if you kind of have a healthy balance of each, then you don't have to worry so much about what the USD recommendations at the time are.
Okay. And when it comes to eating out, if you're looking at a menu and you're at Denny's, what should you gravitate, you know, especially when it comes to holidays and you're traveling? You have to go to these places if you're traveling. Just can't cook. What should you be looking at if you go to IHOP or Denny's on the plate on your menu?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I just read an article about this yesterday too. But you know, watch the appetizer selection, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of the appetizers aren't the healthiest selections on the menu. Try to stay away from creamy sauces like Alfredo sauces, because generally, if you opt for like a red sauce, you know, that's vegetable-based and healthier. And the article I read yesterday said if you're choosing the soup of the day, to use a broth-based soup instead of a cream-based soup, because it it's better for you and it fills you up. And then, you know, of course, you could steer away from the French fries, which is hard to do in Idaho because they know how to make their French fries here.
What about sweet potato pies? I mean, sweet potato fries, is that a good alternative?
Well, that's another one of my bad addictions because I love sweet potato fries. And, you know, I tell myself that they are healthier. and I think they probably are healthier than just regular because sweet potatoes do have more nutrients than regular russet potatoes or baked potatoes. I think anything mm-hmm. fried is probably a bad option, but still sweet potatoes in general have more nutrients.
Okay, so if they want to do sweet potato fries and want to make their own, and they can grow their own sweet potatoes, should they bake them? Or what can you put on them to bake them? Or if you fry them, what can you fry them in?
Well, you know what? I have never fried sweet potatoes at home, so I don't even know the answer to that question. I think you have to deep fry them to cook them properly. Mm-hmm. But if you bake them and put olive oil on the top and salt and pepper, and sometimes we add other herbs or seasonings, and bake them for about 30 minutes on 400, you know, you won't miss the fried version. They're delicious. So,
is that a crunch up on the outside?
They do, and that's why when I bake them at home, I turn up the heat, you know, higher than what, you know, I guess a common baking temperature is 350, so I turn it up higher because that kind of mm-hmm. gets the outside a bit more crisp.
Okay, great. And on fitness, you know, it's really hard to get a person to work out. How can you do that mentally, get a person to just walk and be mobile, you know, not to run a marathon, but to be a little bit more active around the house?
Yeah, I think it's taking baby steps and not starting out thinking, you know, you do, like you just said, not that you have to go out and run a marathon right from day one. To just start little and maybe start with 10 minutes a day walking around the block. Or, you know, so I think it starts small, you know, forgive yourself if you skip it a day. And then really find something you love doing, because if you hate walking or you hate running, you're far less likely to get out there and do it. And there are plenty other things that you can choose from, everything from yoga to tennis to biking to basketball to soccer. You know, there's so many things out there for a person to try these days that there's mm-hmm. bound to be something you'll like. And then it'll be much easier to fit it in your schedule and make it a habit from then on.
How do you balance stress with all of this eating? Because some people are emotional eaters, and they would just eat for the emotional addiction because it makes them feel better. Is there any other type of thing they can do or foods that they can eat that kind of can combat stress? Or they can eat that won't be so fattening?
I think the afternoon munchies are good, you know, whether it's, you know, emotional eating or whether you're genuinely hungry in the afternoon, is to really seek some of those healthier snacks so that they're at your disposal when you have those moments, whether it's fruit or, you know, vegetables and hummus or, you know, some nuts even, just something to reach out to that is healthier. And then I think to have other avenues to pour, you know, our stress into, whether it's, you know, whether it's exercise or something creative, or maybe it's meditation or whatever it is, but to have some other outlet to control stress versus always just turning to food.
Okay. When you actually wrote your book, your first second book, how did you go to the point of having it published? Did you go out to solicit to publishers, or how did you actually get your book published?
Well, it's funny because at the time I wrote the book, it was about the time of the recession, and I was like, oh, I'm going to write a marketing book and, you know, use this to build my business back because it had been, you know, we've been having issues, you know, during the recession period. But instead, mm-hmm. I just decided to write about what I felt passionate about in life, which is health and wellness. So I wrote the book in about 3 months, and my first book, I went to what's called a hybrid publisher, Morgan James Publishing. I sent them the book, and they accepted it like 2 weeks later, and it was in print, you know, soon after that. So my whole first book publishing experience was fairly seamless, but I didn't go the traditional way of finding an agent and then pitching all the big New York publishing houses, because that would have taken considerably longer.
Mm-hmm. And
then with my second,
go ahead.
And my second book, I'm actually working with a Seattle-based publisher called Booktrope. And I had met one of the employees of Booktrope in person, and that's kind of how that relationship got started.
Okay, wow. So in experience, do you go do book signings, or how do you actually promote your book, or they do everything for you?
You know, nobody does everything for you. So unless maybe you're, you know, a E.L. James or somebody else really famous. I don't do a lot of book signings because I think that method is actually becoming a little bit less popular because of all the, you know, social media we have now. It's just not as necessary to get out and sign books in person, though I still like doing it. So it's a combination of doing things online, writing guest blogs, doing speaking. I've done some speaking engagements and, you know, getting on shows like yours today, and kind of a combination of all that stuff to market the books.
Wow. And do you have to get a publicist or a business manager to help you, or you just manage everything yourself?
Well, you know, you can get a publicist, but that will come out of the author's pocket to hire a publicist. I think, again, unless you are one of those, you know, top, you know, 0.5% upper echelon of writers, you know, you yourself are going to have to foot the bill of a publicist. I, at Booktrope, I have my own book manager who works with me and pitches me to certain audiences for certain things, and that person, you know, also gives me advice on how to market my book. So that's the model of my current publishing company, is that they have a book manager for you, but not everybody does that.
Okay. What are the challenges when it comes to of a person who's coming through the system and trying to publish their book? What advice will you give them, what they need to do if they look in this particular route?
I would say just keep an open mind and, you know, explore all the different ways there are to publish books. I mean, you can write a book proposal, pitch it to agents, or pitch it direct to publishers. You know, that's one route. Another is to get some of these more, you know, nimble, kind of what I would call new age publishers who are trying to do things a little different. And then, of course, third, you can always self-publish, and if you, you know how to market yourself, that's an opportunity to not only get the book published faster, but it's also a way to take more of the revenues home when you do sell your book. So there's all different ways to do it now, and I think that's the real refreshing thing about book publishing, is that there are more than one way. There's more than one way to do it these days.
Wow. In closing, any last words that you'd like to share with our audience about your book, and also, you know, where they can find it and your website?
Oh, sure, yeah. You know, both of my books are available now on pretty much any of the online, but I guess most everyone is purchasing their books on either Barnes & Noble or Amazon, and the e-book is less expensive, actually, than the hardcover book. And then also I have a blog, MelindaHensonNeely.com, and on that blog I write various health topics, you know, on fitness, and then I also include a lot of recipes on my blog. So I had somebody say, you have this book and there's no recipes in it. And I'm like, yes, go to my blog and you'll get some recipes. So so that's kind of a nice way to bring it all together.
Wow, we really appreciate it. Where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
You know, I definitely want to keep writing. I have so many ideas, you know, swirling around in my head. But the other thing I really want to do is devote a certain percentage of my time to doing what I can to make the community healthier, whether it's, you know, involvement with, you know, nonprofit organizations or hospitals or healthcare professionals, or doing health coaching. You know, I really want to do what I can and play my part to helping others lead a healthier life.
Well said. I really appreciate you coming on to the interview. Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, Tim. You have a great week.
And have a great day. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This has been another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Thank you for listening, y'all. Man, from the South, I'm going to go ahead and add that. So go ahead and download this episode on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes or Podcast or Podfeed or Podbean. It's available a lot of places. We get a lot of downloads per month. We're up to 150,000 downloads per month on these shows alone. And also, you can write your review on Blog Talk Radio, or we refer you to go ahead and write your reviews in iTunes so we can get some feedback. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great day. This is Tim Jacquet with the Core Business Show. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.